It is time once again for Open Court with Fairfield basketball coach Chris Casey. Along with the coach, I'm Bob Huesler, joined by my broadcast partner, the former Fairfield great, the Hall of Famer, Joe DeSanta. Stags, three games into the season, one win, two losses, back home to host the first ever Mahoney Classic. It'll be the Stags and Stonehill on Friday. And then they play Loyola on Sunday, and then Stonehill and Loyola play each other in between on Saturday. A reminder that the player edition of Open Court this time around will feature the MAC Rookie of the Week, Brandon Benjamin. So if you haven't done so already, be sure to check that out. We have learned very quickly that he is a delightful guy and a very good listen, as is our head coach. Good to be back with Chris Casey. And mixed bag, coach, to begin the season. Really heartbreaking loss at Penn State to open things up. 21-point victory in a chippy game at NGIT, and then Seton Hall hands you that lopsided loss earlier in this week as we speak to you. Where did you see the team grow over these three games, and what are the things that you need now to do the most work on as you get ready for the next phase of this season?
Well, first thing is, I don't know if I've ever been called delightful, Bob. So I've been called a lot of things, but I don't know if delightful is one of them.
I appreciate that.
That's good. Thanks. Yeah. So, I mean, just a quick recap. Like, I thought against Penn State, we played extremely hard, did some really good things, had a chance to win the game at the end. They made a couple plays. We didn't. I mean, I think for a group that's got a pretty big emphasis on youth and inexperience to go in there and, you know, I'm not a moral victory guy, but I thought we really represented ourselves well in that one. And then we came back with NGIT. I thought we did a really good job in that game, competed really hard in that game. You know, we're trying to make that our identity, you know, playing hard, playing fast. And I think we're, you know, moving towards accomplishing that. And then Seton Hall, you know, I thought, first of all, they're very good and they're well coached. I think that was almost like playing ourselves, you know, and against some guys that are a little bigger, maybe a little more physical, a little more athletic. We hung around for a good while, about 8 minutes to go. It's like 11-point game, and then they stretched it out. I thought turnovers hurt us in that game and our inability to stay in offense. And, you know, you talk to people and they tell you, well, you know, they're really long and athletic and physical. They, you know, they kind of forced you out of offense, but I don't buy into that. You know, we needed to be better offensively, be able to move the ball side to side and get to some actions. We did it and we're good with it, but we didn't do it enough. But I do think we competed really hard in that game. Defensively, we held Big East team to 40% and 29% from three. So I thought that was pretty good on our part. So some good things, some good takeaways, and we're excited about finally being home after being on the road for a lengthy period of time.
Not trying to make excuses for you. You don't want to hear them anyway. But how much would it have helped your cause against a pressure team like Seton Hall if Cam Esteves had been a floor in that game for you?
Yeah, well, you always want to go into a fight with all your guys. You know, it doesn't help that he's out, in addition with, you know, Ryan being out and Noah being out. So you always want all your guys. But that's part of college basketball, Bob. You know, and so we never talk about that. What we say is, you know, whoever is in the room and ready to roll, that's who we roll with. And it's part of college basketball, and that's why you always have to be ready to go, and you have to practice like you're ready to go. So when your opportunity comes, you are ready to go.
Yeah, well, I actually have to admit, I kind of set it up so I could lead into this. I thought the fact, and this is just me speaking for myself, I thought the fact that Cam Esteves was suspended for fighting and as a result couldn't play in that Seton Hall game was an abomination. Again, that's just my opinion, because I watched that NGIT game, the incident at the end of the game, all Cam did was step in and try it. I thought, not escalate, but kind of de-escalate, and he gets tagged with a fighting penalty. That's why he wasn't able to play in that game. And so I wanted to get that off my chest. You probably can't talk much further into that, but how would you react to what I just said, I guess is the way.
Yeah, I'll give you a couple things. The first thing is the tape speaks for itself, and everybody's going to have an opinion on it. They're going to have an opinion on how it was reviewed, how it was adjudicated, whether the consequences are fair or not based on what each person did. I certainly have my own opinion on it, but not going to give it to you.
Which is fair, and that's exactly what I would have expected. Okay. Yeah, and you can almost, all right, as you said, you go with who you've got. And the fact is, you went with who you had, and it was a, as you said, that game was there until, you know, around midway through the second half, then they pulled away a very physical, big Seton Hall team. So a couple of questions regarding that particular matchup. First, if you were to face them again in, say, another month or a couple of months down the road, how do you think you would fare in a rematch against Seton Hall? And number two, you had to come out of that game thinking, you know, we are in a lot better shape this year as compared to, say, last year in terms of our own physicality. I mean, this is definitely a bigger and I'll use the word tougher Fairfield team, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is. I know it is based on being with them in practice every day and seeing what we've done thus far in scrimmages and games. Really hard to say, Bob, down the road, you know, if we had a rematch in that game, how it would go. I'm always more concerned about us. I think the positives to pull out of that game were that we really did compete hard. I thought we defended well. The numbers show that. A little too much fouling on the defensive end. Mm-hmm. On the offensive end, we needed to be better in that game. I thought we took steps forward from our scrimmage and from our exhibition game with VCU. In the Penn State game, we took steps forward offensively. I thought we took steps forward against NJIT. I thought we took a little bit of a step backwards against Seton Hall. So, we'll write that and we'll be better offensively on Friday.
I'm going to go backward a little bit because I mentioned to Brandon that game at Penn State, it's a heartbreaker because it was a winnable game. Just want to go over the stretch, the final 3 minutes of that game. You're up six with 3.5 minutes to play. And then there were some Fairfield turnovers. They got some offensive rebounds, Penn State. They hit some tough threes. When you broke down the final 3 minutes of that Penn State loss and looked at it, how difficult was it? Because you saw things that if they had gone the other way, you may get out of there with the win. And how correctable are they? Or let me put it this way. When do you see that curve being met and all those things you saw in the last 3.5 minutes at Penn State are corrected and this Fairfield team is starting to win games like that?
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of it is we have to experience some of those things to get good at it. I think that's a big part of it. You know, you look at that, our three games, we've played three games. You look at those three games, we've played 100 minutes or more with guys playing their first year of Division I basketball.
Right.
And a good majority of them being freshmen. So I think you have to go through those things to get good at them, you know, and to understand how to win. You can watch it on film. You can work on it in practice. You can talk about it a lot, which we do. But until you experience it, you know, you don't make quantum leaps. You know, it's step by step, one foot in front of the other. And, you know, that's what I'm trying to emphasize with these guys. And you know, we want to get better in those moments, you know, at the end of games. And I thought we did against NJIT. You know, we played very well at the end of the first half against them. We played very well to start the second half against them and get some separation. And then we were very good when they came at us and tried to close it. So, you know, we are learning. We got to be more consistent with it.
The three-point shooting. Braden is making 45.5% from behind the arc. He has 10 made three-pointers on the season as we speak to you here today, heading into the Mahoney Classic. Chris, the rest of the team is 13 for 57. That's 23%, and obviously that's not going to get it done for you, and nor do we expect it to be like that this season. Let's take it from both ends. First, with Braden, then we'll get to the other part. Braden is shooting lights out, and he told us during the player edition of our Open Court podcast when we had him on as a guest a couple of weeks ago, he was getting up 500 shots a day in the off season. He's clearly put in the work. Is this a direct result of the work he's put in? And is it something that we now say safely, this is where he is, this is who he's become, you know, an appreciably better. He was good last year, very good. He seems appreciably better in terms of shooting this year. How would you assess where he's at right now in that regard?
I would say it's the result of two things. First is the work, like you're mentioning, and second is the experience. You know, he's back for another year, and I think the experience helps him with that too. He knows exactly what to expect. He knows where his shots come from, and he worked on it all summer. So I think it's a result of those two things, and I think the lower shooting percentage from three from the rest of our guys is not from a lack of work. If you walk by that gym in Walsh, and even last night, guys were in Mahoney getting shots up. We constantly have guys in the gym. It's more inexperience, learning to play at a fast speed. Those, again, those things don't happen in quantum leaps. They happen step by step. What I'm more concerned about right now, and I'm really emphasizing, are we rebounding? Yes, we are. Are we defending hard and playing hard? Yes, we are. So those things, I think, are the first steps to getting very good, and I think we're doing those. And numbers show that. Now we got to be better offensively, and that will come. I'm confident it will come, but that's going to be a step-by-step process with getting experience, knowing where shots are coming from, being able to play in the pressure of a game, all those things.
Okay, so absolutely. You guys are averaging 14 offensive rebounds. You're doing it against good teams. Your definitely team plays hard, okay? Your team definitely rebounds. Now, I have to go back to the offense, and I agree with you it's going to get better. But here's my issue. When you look at Estevez and Deuce, and I'm not here to kill players. That's for darn sure. 5 for 32. Here's why I want to relate this to the last game. Did it hurt you? And I'm probably wrong with this, but you're playing Sparks at the point. He's your point. You got Turner. You got Estevez. Now, all of a sudden, Sparks becomes your main offensive guy, and you're playing Butter Williams at the point. And Sparks is now going to be your two. I mean, Chris, you practiced 8 weeks in the summer, preseason. Is it a different team now? Are you thinking differently? Sparks is your main scorer. Is he going to take on a different role? And I know basketball is positionless these days. I get it. But are you concerned that maybe you're going to have to do something different than what you have for the last 16 weeks you've practiced?
Yeah, it's a good question, Joe, and it's you know, it's a good question to give people insight. And my answer to that is, you know, if you're a basketball player, you're a basketball player. And when we practice Braden off the ball, we practice Braden on the ball, and we practice Tony at the one, and we play Tony off the ball, and we play Eric at the one, and we play Eric off the ball, and we do the same with Deuce. And I think in the long run, that makes you a better player and a better team. So there wasn't any kind of – obviously, we missed Cam a lot. You know, we want Cam in the lineup. He's not available for the game, but there wasn't any, oh, my God, this is all brand new now going into the game, because it's not. I mean, Tony played a lot of point guard minutes for us against NJIT, and he played terrific. I mean, he had 13 points, shot the ball well from the floor. He helped us win. So, yeah, I it's a good question, Joe, but, you know, I feel like the way we practice, I don't – you know, good players play, and I'm more emphasizing that than I am, you know, okay, this guy's not available, now we're in trouble with, you know, positions.
Not trying to make this about any one guy in particular. Not going to do a roll call either. So we will talk. I will bring up this one name, Deuce Turner. I think by consensus was your top incoming transfer. He struggled in the first three games. So what are you seeing? Have you needed to speak to him? And I know you can tell us why he's going to come out of this. What are some of the things that you as a coaching staff are doing to help expedite that and get him to where we know he's going to eventually be?
Well, the first thing is we have 100% confidence in him, you know, and three games do not signify what his season is going to be like individually, nor does it signify what our season as a team is going to be like. We got 100% confidence in him. We tell him that. He does the extra work. He works hard in practice. I think he's feeling his way a little bit now. We probably got to do maybe a few more things for him directly to see if we can get him some shots. And I'm fully confident that he's going to get it rolling at some point, and at some point soon. you know, again, I think things come during a season at different times for different guys. And you see that in pro sports too. You know, a guy starts out great and then fades at the end. A guy, you know, starts out hitting 350 and then, you know, in the month of August, he doesn't hit at all. And, you know, some guy is a guy leading the NBA in 3-point shooting and in January, and then in February he goes like, you know, 4 for 32. So, you know, it there are up and down moments. I think the most important thing is we got to let him know that we have 100% confidence in him, and he will find his way and he will play better.
Any players that you look at today, and we're talking to you Wednesday of the week we get ready to play the first ever Mahoney Classic, any players on this Fairfield team who have exceeded your expectations so far, a little bit further along than you might have initially imagined?
Yeah, I get that question, you know, every year of who's exceeded expectations, who doesn't. I'm not an expectations guy. I hold everybody to a high expectation because I think everybody's capable of playing well. So there's really nobody on our team that I would look at and say, oh, he's much better than I thought he would be. I feel like I'm doing a disservice to a guy if I say, you know, he's much better than I thought he would be, you know, because you're here because I think you're very good. So there's nobody I would really say that, you know, they're exceeding our expectations. I am pleased with the young guys. I think the young guys are going to be very, very good. You know, they're not only talented, but they're terrific young men too. Mm-hmm. As you probably could get a small example of that from talking to Brandon on the podcast, and they're all like that. So, nobody's really exceeded expectations. More so, I'm pleased with the young guys and what they're doing.
Well, the one guy who has met your expectations was recognized by the Mac this week, and you just mentioned his name. We spoke to him, and he's on the player edition of Open Court this week. Brandon Benjamin, Mac Rookie of the Week. The work he's put in and the upside in this youngster's game. Why don't you discuss that and talk about where you see his Fairfield career going in terms of where we are today and how much better it may even get, because he certainly is opening eyes early on.
Yeah, well, he's a pleasure to coach. I mean, he's really picking up what we're doing at a quick pace. He's a great team guy. He knows what he does well and he sticks to that. But at the same time, he's in the gym working on expanding his game. I mean, he hit a three against Seton Hall, you know. So he'll be a guy that, as his career goes on, is just going to get better and better. And I believe that with all our freshmen. Like, if you look at all our freshmen, we have 4 of 5 now have scored double figures in a game.
Yep.
I mean, that's pretty significant, I think, you know, for a roster full of freshmen. So, yeah, he's going to be really good. He's really good right now, and he's got room to grow. And the thing that's going to grow him, Bob, is he's got a great approach to everything. I mean, you could see that when you did the podcast, I'm sure. He's got a great approach to life, a great approach to academics and basketball, and a positive outlook about him. You're around him, and you feel positive energy. So I think he's going to be really, really good.
Yeah, he's a real delight, and I have to warn you, he probably wants a few isolation plays called. Sounds like something that he considers.
He's got a couple. We put a couple in there. He actually, up until Seton Hall, we were very successful with a couple ISOs for him.
I'm going to call this the Alexis Yenta portion of the podcast in honor of one of our all-time favorites here at Fairfield, who every week as a backdrop, we would sit down and asked Chris about where Lex was as he was rehabilitating an injury in his one season here at Fairfield. So we'll call this the Lex portion of the podcast as we ask you about Ryan Zan, Matt Curtis, Peyton Smith, Noah Best. Am I missing anybody there, Joe? I think that's enough. You don't want any more than 4 on the Lex Yenta portion of the podcast.
Wait, Lex incidentally came all the way back this year to work summer basketball camp. I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah, he was such a great guy.
It was great to see him and have him around for a couple weeks.
Isn't his brother playing somewhere right now? His brother played.
Yeah, I'm not sure if his brother's out of eligibility or not, but that was awesome to see him come back and work camp. Really good guy, Bob. I'm not quite sure where anybody is at this point. The guys that are out, I do know. You know, Noah will be out for a couple more weeks. He's working on rehab. Ryan Zan is working on feeling healthy. Peyton's going to be out for some time with his rehab. He's working on that. Who am I missing? Did you have another
Ryan
name for
Zan.
Me?
You mentioned Ryan. Yeah. He's ill.
Yeah.
Is that
yeah, he's working on getting healthy, yes.
Okay, Matt, we're to be determined.
And Matt's a TBA, yes.
But Peyton, recap again what he's dealing with and what he needs to do.
Yeah, I can't give really injury information, you know, per rules and laws, but he's working on his rehab. You know, he's doing some running now, and, you know, we're hopeful to get him back soon for practice. You know, we're in November, maybe early December. I don't know. We have to wait and see. It's you have to see how he progresses with everything, and that's kind of out of my hands. That goes to the rehab people and trainers and so on.
Understanding that, is it fair to say that maybe – and I'm not talking about the two games in December in the MAC, but maybe by the MAC season, is it fair to say maybe by then we'll see Peyton Smith back on the floor?
Yeah, it's hard for me to tell, Bob. And honestly, you know, I'd love to have Peyton back, but I'm really concentrating on the guys that are healthy and playing.
Sure.
And I like what our front court's doing right now. You know, I was hoping Ryan would be healthy sooner. He was playing really, really well, and it's unfortunate for him, but we'll get him back soon. But yeah, it's hard for me to tell. I don't know, because it really is in the hands of the rehab guys.
Okay, we'll wrap it up. Two things, which first I'm going to ask you about the Mahoney Classic and how that all came about and why it is beneficial for Fairfield and this program. And then we'll turn it to Joe for his final comments.
Well, it came about, and Paul Schlickman and Zach Dayton and you know, the administrative staff did a great job supporting it. Bill D'Amico did a great job of getting sponsors for it. So the idea behind it is it gets us more home games. You know, the atmosphere in Mahoney is terrific, and it's become a home court advantage for us. And so the idea is get more home games. And the way you do that is you do it through your own multi-team event. It's like a mini tournament, so to speak. And what it allows you to do is bring teams in, play them at home, and then you don't have to return those games the following year. So if you look at a non-conference schedule, I'll see if I can explain this as briefly as possible, but when you have a non-conference schedule of 11 games, right, you know, two of them you're going to play up games like we did with Seton Hall and Penn State. So that gets you down to 9. You're going to play a Division III opponent at home because the conference allows you to do that, and they should. So that gets you down to 8 now. And then what typically happens is, you know, you're playing in an MTE on the road somewhere, and those are 3 neutral site games. So that gets you down to 5. And then if you play 2, the rest are home and home contracts, so you may have 2 home and 3 road. So that gives you like a total of 3 or 4 home games out of 11 road games, out of 11 non-conference games, and the rest are really road games or neutral site. So what we wanted to get to was where, okay, if there's 11 games, how can we get 6 in Mahoney and 5 road in neutral? Or how can we get 7 in Mahoney and 4 road in neutral? So that's the idea behind it. So we have the most home games now this year since we've had, I think it's the 92-93 season. And that's because of the MTE. You know, we'll play 2 games that don't have to be returned. And we're going to try to keep this going because, I mean, as a coach, you know this, Joe, if you can play 6 or 7 of your 11 non-conference games at home, you're pretty happy about that.
No doubt. So it's my turn?
Wrap it up, Joe.
Okay, but I was going to ask about the MTE. I would like to say congratulations on securing that because especially as the opening games, I feel like there's going to be a buzz. I feel excited about it. It's like an old school tournament. And the good thing for Bob and I is we also get to broadcast the Saturday game between Loyola and Stonehill. So we have 3 games, which means I get more money out of the school.
Trying to keep you working, Joe. You know.
Okay. But and also, I don't know if you mentioned this, but the NCAA says you're allowed to play 29 only. But with this MTE, they allow you to play 2
yeah.
more,
so
31.
Basically what they tell you is it's called a 28+3. So you can play 28 and then +3 in an MTE
gotcha.
Or 29
gotcha.
And +2 in an MTE. Those scenarios get you to 31. Now, you're not required to do that. Right. If you don't play in MTEs, you play 29 games.
But next year it's going to change.
Now, next year the rules have now changed. The MTEs are much, much less limited now, and they've added an extra game. So you'll play 32 games now in a regular season rather than 31. And the conference has gotten us in a challenge with the America East.
So, oh, nice.
Yeah,
oh, really?
So they're going to announce that down the road, but that'll give us some home or away with the America East, and it helps you with scheduling. You can get an extra game.
And again, my understanding, and you can confirm or deny, exhibition games will count next year towards your 32?
No, they won't. They won't count towards the 32.
Oh, no. I've been saying that on my other broadcast, so I've been wrong.
Yeah, I could be wrong too, Joe, but the way I understand it, they don't. Mm. But you can play two exhibition games if you want early on. So, and I'm a proponent of that. Joe from coaching, when you do these scrimmages, you basically play them like a game anyway.
Right, correct.
You know, maybe you play an extra 8-minute half or something like that. But they really play them like a live game. So why not put the uniforms on and make it an exhibition game? I thought going to VCU, I think, helped us a lot. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really good for us to do.
Well, if I speak quickly, we can wrap this up in under half an hour. We're getting there. We promised this year we were going to set the goal of trying to make these a little more condensed. I can tell you, though, we went pretty long there with Brandon, Coach, and I'm going to repeat it. It's worth listening to because you brought in not only a great basketball player, but a delightful young man, as I know all of your guys are, but he really stood out for us today. We got to get Joe out of here. So let's
got grandfather duties.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
So let's wrap this up. Well, that'll do it for this edition of Open Court with Chris Casey. And again, for the final time, we remind you that we do a player edition. This time around, you want to check out our player edition with the MAC Rookie of the Week, Brandon Benjamin, as the Stags get ready to play in the Mahoney Classic, the first ever Mahoney Classic. The Stags will play Stonehill on Friday, Loyola on Sunday, in between the neutral game between Stonehill and Loyola. A lot of great basketball coming up this weekend at Mahoney Arena. Thanks to Drew Kingsley for engineering here today. Want to thank Chris Casey, as always, for being so generous with his time. For the Fairfield Hall of Famer, Joe DeSantis, I'm Bob Huesler. Thanks for listening to Open Court.